Hello and welcome to another Network Computing Security Channel podcast. My name is Kurt Franklin. I'm your host for these podcasts, and we've got a very neat podcast for you this evening. I say it's evening. I'm sitting here on the East Coast at about, a quarter of 10 in the evening doing this. I find out that I'd spend a lot of time fairly late at night doing podcasts just because that's the time when the phone has stopped ringing. Tell you what, it's been an active 2 or 3 weeks in security. Lots of new vulnerabilities found. We've got outbreaks of some old friends out there causing some havoc. And it just seems like there is security in the consciousness of managers and users in every direction. Well, we're going to look in this podcast at one particular direction. That's security from the inside. You know, most of the things that get the public attention are from the outside. People trying to break into your network, trying to make off with your information or your customers' data. Well, as you and I know, statistically, you're far more likely to run into problems with security issues on the inside of your network. And in this podcast, I talked with David Lynch, who's a vice president at Apani, and we spent a lot of time talking about this issue of security from the inside. How do you protect your network from the people who are authorized to be there, whether you're protecting it from malicious activities or simply from the inadvertent bad things that can happen when people lose concentration or don't pay attention? I think it's a fascinating issue and one that, frankly, we haven't been paying enough attention to. A large reason for that is that we do have our attention grabbed by all of these external problems, Bagel and Sober and exploits from outside, that it's easy to lose sight of just how much we can lose when someone on the inside either makes a mistake or tries to take advantage of us. I'll be back at the end of the interview to talk about what's coming up next and give my thoughts on a couple of things. But until then, here is my interview with David Lynch of Apani. David, many people concentrate on security as a function designed to keep the bad guys out of our networks. Many people, though, are beginning to suspect that some of our worst threats lie on the inside. What's your take on that question?
I think that that's particularly valid. In fact, the industry is going through a shift at the moment. Up until now, the basic security paradigm or security strategy that people have put in place is essentially to establish a strong perimeter around a trusted environment, and then, as you said, keep the bad guys out. The challenge we have is twofold, I think. Essentially, you've got a situation occurring where the value of personal data that every organization keeps and is generally scattered throughout the organization has skyrocketed recently. In the past couple of years, it has really hit the roof. Today, a single data record for an individual that can be used as an electronic identity for e-commerce will sell anywhere between $4 and $100, and that's for a single record. So I think a couple of things have happened. The first thing is this: all of a sudden now we have a lot of valuable stuff roaming around inside the perimeter, and that's creating an opportunity for insider attack. Insider attacks have been with us since the get-go. Really, I think I have never seen a FBI CSI report in the past 10 years that hasn't identified insider attacks being at least as prevalent as attacks from the outside. But I think now you have the combination of the value of the data that's in there, And you also have a thing that's being termed, which is a horrible word, but it's deperimeterization, where the perimeter itself is losing its effectiveness to actually keep people out. So I think we've got a real problem now. The traditional security paradigm and security strategies and security technologies are just not sufficient anymore to completely protect an organization.
Well, when you're looking at the different threats, internal versus external, are there fundamental differences in the nature of the threats coming from the separate directions?
Well, I think that there are, although, again, there's a lot of commonality. Obviously, you know, one of the major motivating forces for insider attacks tends to be retribution for something. They tend to be sabotage. They tend to be, I've just got laid off, so I'm going to get back. I'm going to cause some pain to someone who's upset me. Or they're opportunistic. There's value here, and I can extract value by either stealing data records and reselling them, or stealing intellectual property and reselling that. And obviously the financial side works both for the insider and the hacker. I think the reality is today hackers coming in from the outside less and less now are involved in sabotage. They're more and more involved in the opportunistic financial set of the problem. But inside you've got both. You've got sabotage and data theft.
Well, when you look at the idea of sabotage, obviously, as you point out, when someone is coming in from the outside and is looking for some sort of opportunistic threat availability, their target is going to be the data set. It seems that if someone is looking for revenge or, you know, trying to cause disruption, that data could be a target, but they might also look at infrastructure pieces. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I mean, infrastructure, in all the sabotage attacks that have been noted and reported, and in fact, CSI put out a very good insider attack white paper earlier this year. It's available on our website if anyone wants to take a look at it. But the infrastructure attacks, the ability to bring a network down, is one of the favored sabotage attacks, if you will. Another one is the deliberate releasing of virus, trojans, worms, things of this nature. Very difficult to prove. And once it gets into an environment inside, the propagation time for these things can be horrendous. They can be really, really quick.
Okay. Well, the ways in which we protect against external threats are fairly well understood, and we have sets of hardware and software that we can deploy at the perimeter. Are there the same tools that are available if we're trying to protect against internal attacks, or do we have to look at an entirely different set of mechanisms and procedures that we'll use to protect from threats coming from the inside?
No, it's very much a very different scenario. The technologies and the security structures that have been built around a perimeter-based strategy are focused on essentially protecting gateways, protecting portals, protecting doors into the environment, looking at what's coming in, looking at what's going out, but protecting it through a convenient throttle point. The challenge that you have when you start saying, okay, now I have to secure inside my perimeter, that's a completely different ball of wax. There are no convenient choke points for you to monitor traffic or to monitor access. Communication inside an environment, by design, is point-to-point. Information is flowing as applications need it, as users access applications. It's very free-form. In addition to that, the environment inside an environment, inside a perimeter, is very different from the outside. You generally have you have legacy applications which really were never designed and don't know how to handle security. It's usually a larger scale environment inside. When you count up the number of servers and workstations that are inside an environment, inside a perimeter, comparing to outside a perimeter, the number tends to be a great deal larger than you actually have outside. I think the fundamental issue is TCP/IP, which is the bedrock of all internal networks, was designed for the get-go to be an open environment. And with a perimeter defense, that really doesn't matter, because if you were inside, you know, you had the right to be there. You've passed all the perimeter defenses, and you have the right to be inside, and consequently, you have the right to roam around. Without the choke points, you really now have to take a new view of security, and you have to view it as really a network issue. Organizations are trying to take the technologies that were built for the perimeter, gateway-based technologies to secure data in motion, for instance. But it's just, you know, you can only do that with a small segment, and then you have to route traffic through a choke point, which disrupts the entire environment. So no, this is the tools that we used for the perimeter and beyond really don't work very well at all inside the environment at all.
All right, so if someone wants to make sure that their environment is protected from the inside as well as from the outside, where do they begin? Where's the first place that they should begin hardening their environment to internal attacks?
Well, there's a couple of ways of approaching this, and it depends on the environment, and also depends on the priorities that the environment has. One approach is to look at data security. And so you look at protecting your data in motion as well as your data at rest. And obviously that's a combination of encryption and access control technologies that are needed there. There's you can take another approach to this, and that is to basically duplicate the perimeter, i.e. you take what you've got, one large perimeter, well, you use perimeter-based kind of technologies to segment your network so that you create a range of smaller protected environments, if you will. This is a little bit like the watertight doors on a battleship. It means if you are attacked, if a virus does get in, if someone does get access to anything, you minimize the effect of that. So there are two views. One is I take this watertight door view, and one analyst is calling it a fire door view. So I segment my network down to minimize my risk. And the other one is I'm going to focus on what the problem is, which is I need to protect this data. And I'm going to protect it as it flows around the network, and I'm also going to protect it while it's sitting at rest.
All right. Let me ask real quickly. We tend in the industry to focus on technological solutions to pretty much any problem that comes along. But if you're talking about a problem, a threat that originates from your own employees, are there steps that we need to be taking in the hiring or training of those employees to minimize the possibility that attacks are going to occur from the inside?
I think, I mean, obviously, yes. A report came out a little earlier this year. The Secret Service, working with CSI, actually took that approach. They went back over the past year, talked to a number of people, got all the reports of insider attacks, removed the insider attacks that dealt with money as a primary motive, and just tried to see if they could create a profile of the attacker, which would help exactly as you're describing there. It would help screen out as you hire people. And it would also help put some focus on security policies inside. Interestingly enough, the conclusion they came up with is there is no profile of an insider attacker. They're more likely tending to be someone in the IT organization than anywhere else. But I personally believe this is probably more opportunistic than anything else. Members of the IT organization generally have a broader access. They generally have a more ready access to environments. And it is, in today's world, a very high-stress environment. I think communication and training about security, about managing security, about being taking security seriously is vital for any organization. But you can only take that so far. I think you've got a couple of things that an organization needs to do. I mean, I've talked to a lot of CIOs about this particular problem. And the very first thing that an organization needs to go through is a mindset change. When you talk to senior managers about an insider attack problem and protecting against insider attack, one of a curious thing can happen sometimes. I've actually seen senior managers squirm in their seat, actually physically move at the thought that they cannot trust people in their environment. It's a mindset that I associate with our tribal background. We come from a long history of building tribes and trusting our tribe and not trusting anyone else's tribe. And the thought that you can't actually trust your tribe is a psychological block that a lot of people have to get through before they can really start establishing firm security. And it's interesting, the whole aspect of screening and training are one of the first placebos, if you will, that someone who wants to trust his tribe goes through. Eventually, you have to get to and augment that with technologies that will actually alert you when out-of-bounds activity is taking place, technologies that will actually secure data as it's moving around, technologies that will actually prevent people from accessing information that they really don't need to access in their day-to-day life, removing temptation.
Interesting. Well, one of the things that I have heard from a couple of people is that there are organizations who have problems because when they take a final look at it, they're amazed that they tend not to actually know where their data lives. Or at least not know where all of it is.
Yes.
Do you find that's true in the cases of the companies that you look at?
Oh, it's absolutely true. I mean, and you have to look at where this problem has come from. Data, up until a couple of years ago, data was like paperclips. It had no intrinsic value. People needed data to do their jobs. And because of that, data permeated throughout the organization. It's resident on laptops, it's resident on desktops, in multiple applications, obviously in databases, because that's the structural approach. But I mean, data is the bedrock of servicing a customer. If you don't know who they are, what they buy, how they process their orders, what their stock levels are, and so on and so forth, it's very difficult to service a customer. And business is all about servicing a customer,
right?
Which is, again, one of the significant problems. We really have come to a market change here. The change in the value of this data has caught a lot of people by surprise. And the effect of a data breach has caught a lot of people by surprise. The effect is significant. The Wall Street Journal did a little study back in July. They took a look at all of the breaches that had gone through this year, so starting in January through to July, and where the organization declared or alerted their customers to a data breach. And interestingly enough, they found that there's an immediate hit. The moment you have a data breach, your stock price is going to drop anywhere from 1% to 3.5%. Over the next 7 days, it's going to fall an additional 5% to 14%.
Fascinating.
And generally speaking, only about 30% of the companies that they looked at in this study actually recovered. 70% didn't. One company, who you're probably familiar with, Card System Solutions, actually not only lost their customers, they ended up, they're in the process today, I think, of being taken over by their nearest competitor. So the value of the data that's in there, I think, is catching a lot of people by surprise. The impact, you know, there's another impact. EDS recently did a survey looking at banking customers. And they asked online banking customers, what would they do if their bank told them that, you know, their personal information has been compromised? And 50%. 50% of the customers would make some change to their banking relationship with the bank. A third would stop all business with the bank and move to another bank.
Wow.
I mean, this is this whole issue of data protection, it gets wrapped up in compliance. It gets wrapped up in regulations. But the fact is, this is a real business issue. There's no business, I don't think there's a business out there could survive 30% of its customers moving away from it in one day. It would kill almost any business that's out there.
That's a huge percentage, without question.
It is. And I mean, obviously, that's online banking, so yeah, high risk and so on and so forth. But it's also an expression of the concern that consumers have about the companies that are holding their data. And I, this is one of the other elements that I think is worthy of discussion. The reality is, as an organization, I don't own this data. I'm just the custodian. The owner of the data is the customer. And customers are, consumers in general are really taking that approach. And I've seen survey after survey that talks about, you know, they want to know that the companies they do business with treat their data seriously, and that they protect it.
Right.
And I think this is why organizations are really struggling today, because the existing technologies support a perimeter-based defense, whereas all the data is inside. So I've got to protect it inside. And this is why APAN is here. This is what we do.
Very good. Well, one last question. First, I'll thank you for taking the time to talk with me today.
No problem.
But one last question. As you look forward, do you see the tools that information security officers have at their disposals for dealing with this problem growing and changing into the future?
Absolutely. I mean, excuse me. This is it's a known problem. It's being driven by a real market trend. This is not a problem that's going to go away. So almost all security organizations are looking to find some way of adapting the technology that they produce to secure inside the environment. Plus, you have organizations like ourselves, like APAN. We were built from the ground up to secure inside the perimeter. Our technology is designed expressly to do that. It works in the same way that the environment inside the perimeter works. It's point-to-point. We secure data in motion. We protect data at rest. We provide a very strong audit trail reporting on out-of-bounds activity. And more importantly, we take the overall structure of the IP, TCP/IP, as an open environment, and we allow organizations to turn it into a closed environment, a default deny, so that all people within the organization can only access things that they are expressly allowed to access. Once you can do that, then you can really start protecting. And this is the new wave of security technology. And there are people behind us. There are other people coming along. Larger organizations are looking at different ways to do this. I think almost every security organization is focused on this problem. And there are solutions available today, and obviously there will be more coming down the pipe.
Super. Well, I will look forward to having a chance to talk with you again in the future. It sounds like that we're not going to run out of things to talk about anytime soon.
Anytime at all, I'd be delighted.
Well, that was my interview with David Lynch.
I think you'll agree that it was some interesting stuff there, talking about security from the inside of the network. Well, now we're coming down towards the end of the year, and it's time for me to ask for your help. I would like to do a year-end wrap-up, sort of the most important story, most important development in security for the year. And I can certainly do that. I've been writing about security and writing about the computer industry long enough, I can come up with a list of top 5 or 10 pretty much at will. But I would much rather get your take on what the most important stories and most important developments in security were for 2005. So if you would, please drop me a line. Drop me an email at cfranklin@cmp.com and let me know what your ideas are. If yours are some of the better ones, I might give you a call and have you as part of my year-end podcast. I think that would be a fairly interesting way to do things. So if you are interested in doing that, when you send me the email, please let me have your contact info as well. More good stuff coming up. I tell you what, podcasting is really taking off here at CMP. Network Computing is doing more. We have Mike DeMaria, who has begun a podcast in his pipeline. We have Mike Fratto over at Secure Enterprise, who's begun. Podcasting has taking off in every direction. This is what I get for podcasting late at night. And tell you something you ought to look at. Go over to the new show. We have begun video podcasting. This is just the first of a whole variety of audio and video podcasts that we're going to be bringing out over the next couple of months. So I hope you enjoy them. As always, let me know what you think about what we're doing. And I can't wait to talk to you next time. Until that next time, I'm Kurt Franklin for the Security Channel podcast at Network Computing. So long.